You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to our special holiday edition of the D-backs Hot Stove Podcast. I'm Mike Farron, and big news this week is the D-backs agreed to terms on a five-year contract with Madison Bumgarner, the former World Series and National League Championship Series MVP, who'd spent his entire big league career with the San Francisco Giants, chose the Diamondbacks, taking less money in the process to do it and coming in to anchor the rotation. We'll have lots from that coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk to Torrey Lovello. We'll visit with D-backs GM Mike Hazen about the deal and the rest of the winter. And we'll sit down and break down what the Bumgarner signing means for the D-backs with the television voice of the Diamondbacks, Steve Berthiaume. But first, let's hear from the man himself, Madison Bumgarner. Well, first of all, welcome to Phoenix. I know you talked about the Valley being a second home. What made you fall in love with this area?
Man, honestly, everything about it. I've spent a lot of time here. Been coming here for spring training since 2007 was my first, I got drafted in 2007, so come out here that fall. And just kind of grew to like it more and more over the years. And you know, I've been here so much now. I got a ton of friends here, know a lot of people, know a lot of places. You know, I know this area as good as I know my home area. Mm-hmm. I know that for sure. So really just everything about it. You know, I'm kind of a Western guy at heart. So
how much have you taken advantage of being an outdoors guy of what Arizona and the Southwest has to offer?
A lot. You know, it has a ton to offer to that kind of guy. I think that's why so many – you know, I can relate to so many of the people that live here. So, you know, it's a really cool place to be a part of, and I'm extremely excited to get to call this home for the next 5 years and hopefully longer.
What are some of the things that maybe you have done that have kind of opened your eyes to what the region is like?
You know, I spent a lot of time up in the Tonto National mm-hmm. Forest, you know, because I live close to there. So spent a lot of time out there. You know, I've – avid hunter, fisherman, so got to do a little bit of that, ride horses up there. So, you know, just being out kind of in the open country is really cool to me.
You know, you mentioned having a lot of similarities with folks from the West. I understand you had a chance to talk to Ken Kendrick, the managing general partner, before. What did you learn in that conversation? Why was it important for you to talk to him? He's somebody from not far from where you grew up.
Yeah, he's only – shoot, we figured out we grew up kind of, you know – less than 3 hours apart, which is pretty insane. You know, it's a small world sometimes. It sure seems that way. So, you know, talking to him, Hazen, just the whole organization here that I've got to meet and talk to, Torrey, man, everybody has been incredible and exceeded all expectations I could have had. They've been so welcoming to me and my family. They've taken great care of us. I couldn't be happier.
With Torrey, obviously, one of the great things he does is he builds trust immediately. Mm-hmm. What was the difference between maybe the first conversation and the second phone conversation you had with him?
It was easy. There wasn't really a transition. I felt he's the kind of guy that I felt like I've known for a long time. It was easy to talk to. You know, we're both baseball guys, so, you know, that was easy to talk about. You know, I've seen him, you know, we've been so close to each other for a long time, seeing him across the field. And, you know, I felt like I already knew him, especially after listening to people that we, you know, mutual friends of ours talk about him. And, man, he's just a special guy, a special type of manager. You know, I don't know if there's another one out there like him right now. And I'm extremely, extremely excited to play for him and go to battle for him every day.
You know, one of the things that you said in your press conference that really resonated was you want to continue to learn. Why is it so important for you to continue to learn as a pitcher? You've accomplished an awful lot.
I want to be as good as – I want to win. That's the whole reason I play this. I don't play it for any personal goals or money or anything like that. I want to win. And – you know, all the stuff that comes along with it's nice, but at the end of the day, that's what it's about. And if you're not learning, you're going to get stuck and maybe go backwards. So you got to keep learning and adapt. And you know, there's always, especially this game is such a complex game, there's always ways you can get better.
How do you think you've changed the most over the last couple of years?
Man, I don't think there's been a great big change over the last few years. I think it's been a gradual change my entire career. You know, obviously sometimes, you know, you might make a bigger jump than others. but I'm just always trying to put myself in a situation to learn, in a situation to get better. And sometimes it takes failing to get better. You know, that's the beauty of it. But
I get a lot of unsolicited texts from former teammates, former Giants, members of the Giants organization, mm-hmm. talking about you over the last couple of days. And the thing that stood out the most was everybody raved about you as a teammate. What does it mean to be a great teammate? How do you be a great teammate?
Man, that's tough to answer. I certainly appreciate all the compliments, though, because that's, you know, everybody wants to do that. They want to be able to do that. I think the biggest thing is putting yourself and your teammates in a chance to win and helping each other win and learn from each other and picking somebody up when they're down or maybe kicking somebody in the butt when they need to be and them doing the same thing to me and being good with that, being comfortable with that and not, you know, just handling things the right way, taking things the right way. That's kind of, you know, just be a man about it. And I want to help my team be the best they can be, and I want them to help me be the best I can be.
Before I let you go, competitiveness is the number one thing you mentioned. You want to compete. Everybody wants to win. Not everybody wants to compete. You love to compete.
Yeah.
When did you realize you were different in that regard, that it was like, man, I just want to be out there competing?
Man, my thought process has been that way since I can remember. I don't know what causes that, what caused it. And it's only gotten stronger as times went on. That's a tough one. I've been asked that question a lot, and I wish I could give a straight answer on it, but I don't think I can.
It certainly is one of the things that stands out. Congratulations. Welcome to Phoenix, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Really exciting to see Madison Bumgarner in the D-backs uniform for the first time. Did his first photo shoot with the organization as well. Was in great spirits with his wife, Allie, and his brother-in-law and a family friend here as well. So looking forward to getting Bumgarner into the organization very, very quickly and getting acclimated with the D-backs and into the Valley more frequently. And one person that he consulted with before he signed with the D-backs was their manager, Torrey Lavelle.
Hi, Torrey. When did you first hear that Madison Bumgarner was somebody that you guys might pursue?
It was probably about 4 or 5 days ago. And, you know, it was just some light conversation between Mike and I, and it's very typical. He just keeps me informed about what direction he's going in with certain guys and certain situations at certain positions. And, you know, I know that they were digging in and doing all that they could. And it's a certain point I got a chance to get involved and get on the phone with them. But that was a couple of days after, I think, the initial interest.
So as you started to hear about that, what was your reaction?
Well, obviously, I was very excited, right? I mean, he's one of the best in the game for so long, and he's got an unbelievable track record, and it just keeps getting better the more you unfold him. And I knew that somebody could sit at the top of our rotation like that. It would be great for the other guys. And I knew it got serious when I got involved and got a chance to talk to Madison. I had about a 30-minute conversation with him. I felt like we really connected. And when I hung up the phone, I kept thinking to myself that, you know, it's somebody that's very interested in being an Arizona Diamondback.
As you started to do your own due diligence, who were some of the people whose brains you picked about Madison?
It's easy to say. I mean, there's a couple guys. It was Matt Hergis was probably the most important guy. He's now our pitching coach, and got a chance to connect with him a little bit and just have an idea of what I was going to be able to how I was going to be able to connect with him a little bit. But, you know, that gets you in for about 2 or 3 minutes of the conversation, and then, you know, you hang up the phone with all that. Pre-read information. I think we hit it off well beyond that. But Matt was a guy I leaned on to find out what type of conversation I could expect to have and what it would kind of go like. And it was all that I expected and then some.
You know, one of the things that Mike Hazen brought up, Madison kind of addressed at the press conference, was working with young starters. Mm-hmm. What kind of impression did you get from him about mm-hmm. the impact he might be willing to have on guys like Gallen, yeah. Young, Weaver?
Yeah, I asked him that very question, and I said to him, look, those are my expectations. I want you to be able to teach these guys and walk these guys over that next level and beyond, because we have some really good young pitchers. And he complimented the group that we had had here. We do have a very, very healthy group. But something that was very interesting, and he kind of touched on a little bit in his press conference, was that he just wants to be a normal guy and fit in. He will take on that responsibility, but he doesn't want to do anything other than be a great teammate, be prepared, go out there and compete, and have the guys watch him. And in his very humble way, I don't think he understands just what he's done in this game and how people look at him. But we're going to lean on him in the right way every time we can.
Your first game as manager of the Diamondbacks was against Bumgarner. Obviously, you ended up winning, which was great. Yeah. But what were you thinking about facing him as a manager for the first time through the first seven innings?
Yeah. Well, he had two home runs that day, right? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This guy's unbelievable, and he can throw zeros up there and hit bombs. But I knew that we were going up against one of the best, and it was that competitiveness. It was getting big outs at the right time. It was making pitches to the right players at the right time. So I was a great knack for that. So I've watched him for a long time, and I get to now watch from the same dugout.
The competitiveness is the thing that oozes.
Yeah.
Does he remind you of anybody that historically?
Well, I mean, I think Clayton Kershaw and he have that natural ingredient where it's easy to compare them because they're left-handed. But they make big pitches when they need to. They don't back down. And they're all over this game. But those are a couple guys that I've watched over the past couple years. Randy Johnson, to me, when I played with the big unit way back in the day, had that natural, that beauty to get out there and compete. And there was a fierceness to him with every pitch that he threw. I think Madison compares very well with Randy.
It's a nice Christmas present, Torrey. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Madison Bumgarner was initially on Torrey Lovello's Christmas list, but, you know, once he had a chance to get him, you know that that's exactly what he wanted. He was his Red Ryder BB gun this year. And he was provided for by D-backs GM Mike Hazen. We had a chance to talk to Mike about not just the Bumgarner deal, how it came together, but what's still in store for the D-backs this winter.
Mike, I know even talking back at the end of last season, into the first part of the GM meetings, offense seemed to be a focus. It seems like a pretty big shift in signing Madison Bumgarner. What led to this decision?
I'll say. We felt like we were going to have to address our long-term starting pitching at some point. We did not go off into this offseason anticipating necessarily that this offseason was going to be when we were going to do that. Maybe if a trade came up, but, you know, as we started to, you know, you explore all options every offseason, no matter what sort of your to-do list is when you go off into the offseason. I feel like we have to be flexible enough to explore every option and see where it takes you to some degree without getting off your plan too much. And, you know, what we felt great about with this was the fit, the competitor we were adding. We felt like we lost the top of the rotation starting pitcher when we clearly lost the top of the rotation starting pitcher when we traded Zach last year. But, you know, we felt like you lose more than that in a lot of cases with those guys. But, you know, and then the structure allowed us to continue to out pursue our goals on the offensive side.
As you looked at the starting pitching market maybe going into next year too, when you might have a more pronounced need with both Ray and Leak being free agents after this season, the fact that it wasn't quite as deep, did that impact this decision at all too?
Yes, we looked out over the next couple of years, and there's still a lot of quality guys probably that are – you just never know what the market's going to look like between extensions or options picked up, and so you can never really tell. But right now we felt like, you know, that market may not be as deep with a lot of teams competing, because every year it seems the need for starting pitcher seems to get greater and greater. And so that's why we sort of did this now.
You know, as the winter meetings were starting, the Diamondbacks' interest in Bumgarner started to leak a little bit, but then the prices went crazy on the starting pitching market. At any point during that week, did you feel like this was still a possibility, or did you think that he was potentially going to be priced out?
As the week went on, we definitely had some concern about where it was heading, but we weren't really that deep into the process at that point. I think coming out of the winter meetings was more where it started to move a little bit quicker. But yeah, you see how the market behaves, and you so you have to choose to react to it, or you have to choose to, you know, ignore it and pursue other things. And, you know, thankfully this one came together the way it fit for us.
What were your initial conversations like with Madison himself?
You know, very, very casual. Torrey talked to him on the phone during the process. I did not talk to him on the phone during the process. I don't like to, you know, water that down too much. I talked to him after we agreed with him. I was at the Browns Cardinals game on Sunday. So I was calling from the concourse. That's when it all blew up, when Mike Farron was texting me nonstop about if the deal
I
was done.
I'm
just
once.
Joking.
I should have.
But. And then just meeting with him here today, you know, he seems – I think one of the things that he has repeated to say is he feels like he's going to help make our organization better. And I think that's a very simple, succinct way of how we feel. Him throwing the baseball well, being an elite pitcher, is an important piece to what we just did for our team, but I also think there's going to be a lot of other things that we are going to benefit from as an organization.
You know, the projection systems look at pitchers as they have mileage and as they get into their 30s, and they're not always particularly kind. And I know some of it's baked in because he missed time with a couple of arm related injuries. But how did you view that as he moves into his mid 30s and the ability to be able to help it as he gets towards the end of the contract?
Yeah, look, I think that we look at those things. We certainly acknowledge, you know, where a player is at in their career and what they've done to date and what it means to have thrown a lot of innings as a starting pitcher in the big leagues. We also think there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot more that it means to be a starting pitcher. I think as starting pitchers age, I think the best ones that – And being left-handed and not necessarily relying on velocity is very similar to the last guy we had who was at the top of his game and not necessarily relying on velocity. And I think what that means is they've been conditioned to pitch a certain way. But I think that's still going to have to evolve a little bit, as every pitcher is going to have to evolve as they go through the league. As many times as he's gone through the league, you start racking up at-bats with, you know, a group of position players, and they get to know you pretty well. And I think that game of adjustment is always going to go on. It's going to go on for him just like it's going to go on for all of our young guys. And I think that example is what's important.
And you said in the press conference that signing Madison Bumgarner doesn't mean that you have to trade a starting pitcher. The way the contract is structured seems to give you flexibility. As you look at it now, does this close any potential avenues for you, or are as many open as, you know, were before for how you want to improve the roster, whether it's via trade or free agency?
Right. I think we're in roughly the same spot that we were before. We've made some commitment, obviously, to the 2020 team here with this deal, but I still think it gives us a lot of flexibility about how we're going to put the rest of the team together.
And as you view it now, I mean, obviously the trade market was pretty slow at the winter meetings. Are you starting to hear more discussions maybe than what you did a week ago with in terms of just teams picking up the phone, being more active in trade talks?
Not necessarily, surprisingly. So I don't know, with the holidays coming up maybe, and maybe we'll see some activity on the other side of January 1st. But, you know, it's a pretty deep free agent market, and it still seems like the free agents are being flushed out pretty aggressively. So we'll see. I would imagine that the attention does turn to the trade market at some point, but it hasn't just yet.
All right, Mike, we appreciate the time. Happy holidays.
Thanks, Mike. Happy holidays.
All right, you've heard from most of the stars of the Tuesday press conference at Chase Field featuring Madison Bumgarner. We're joined now by the other star.
That's funny.
Television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Steve Berthiaume.
I'm getting the star treatment. I'm in your lovely man cave,
please,
and your dog
please.
Is once again sitting on my
it's
lap.
It's the Diamondbacks Digital Studio.
Oh, that's right.
The
sponsored
official
by
Diamondbacks Digital Studio. We are looking for a sponsor for it if you'd like to.
I would suggest maybe a flea collar company because your 80-pound dog is sitting on my lap again.
I have this chair and a half in here. I don't know if we described this the last time in the digital studio that my dog Pops likes to sit in, and Bert is sharing the seat with him. And he is taking up more room than you.
Well, he's bigger than I am. First of all,
you don't seem to mind, though.
I love dogs. I have my own dog, Jon Snow. I spent most of last night chasing Jon Snow around the streets of Arcadia. So,
Bumgarner press conference and a good game of chase.
You think it's all superstars and fancy cars, but no, I just spent the night chasing my dog around the neighborhood. And but it's particularly embarrassing when you're walking around going, Jon Snow, Jon Snow, and that guy thinks he's in a TV show.
Didn't think of that when you named the dog, did you?
And you go, wait a minute, he is in a TV show, but not that one. No, I'm sitting here with Pops, who this is the second time I've done the show from his lovely chair and a half, and both times Pops As soon as I sit down, he jumps right up and sits on my lap, which is great.
We like to make things comfortable for our guests over here.
He's a good analyst.
Good color man. He will chime in from time to time. You got to watch that, though. He's pretty loud.
He's not the best dog in the business for nothing, folks.
He's not. Well, he certainly is the best dog. Let's talk about the big news this week. I mean,
what happened? Did I miss something?
I hate to break it to you, Steve, but Madison Bumgarner is a Diamondback because he wanted to be a Diamondback and took less money to come here. How cool is that?
I'm glad you put it that way, because that was the thing, having spent most of the afternoon at Chase Field and hanging around Matt. Do we call him Mad Bum? What do we call him?
I think we can call him Madison.
It seems a little formal to call him Madison, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, that's his name.
I know, but I know you never hear anyone refer to him as Madison.
I'm not going
to
call him Maddie.
Bochy used to call him Bummy, right? Or Bummer, Bum, Bummy?
Bum, I think.
That seems a little too something.
We're not, we just getting to know the guy.
I know.
Like,
I don't
know that we can
I'm asking you for advice. Like, you're a good people person. Anyway, I was very impressed with how happy he was to be there. And it really did seem genuine. It wasn't sort of this phony introductory press conference kind of deal, because I don't think he's got a phony bone in his body.
Right.
But boy, he was really, really happy. And everyone was really happy to have him, obviously. It's been so far a really, really good fit.
You know, I think one of the things that stood out is a lot of times you see guys change teams and they still haven't quite shifted mode, right? And they're still talking about their new team, and it just doesn't feel like it's normal. Bumgarner was pretty unique in the way that he handled that press conference, in that he was already all in. You could tell he was already all in. The Giants were in the past. I got unsolicited texts from former teammates, people who had worked with him in the Giants organization over the previous couple of days, talking about what kind of a person he was, what kind of a teammate he was. And that was really cool to hear, too, that this guy is really, you know, it's not just that he's a competitor, but he is a team guy. And I think that shows up from little things like how he structured the contract so that the D-backs can follow a number of different paths still. No avenues are closed to them this winter in trying to improve the club.
He's going to make $6 million next year.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. It's amazing. And then to defer some of the money. Now, I'm guessing, and I asked Mike Hayes in this the other day, and he sort of agreed or acknowledged it, that I said, did you have to go to the fifth year to get it done? I think maybe they wanted to stop at 4 for $70 million, and then they were able to get to 5 for $85 million, but defer, in a sense, that sort of fifth year, defer that amount of money anyway and spread that out over different ways to get creative and get it done. And he had to be a big part of that to agree to sort of backload the contract and then defer some of the other money to get it done. But that speaks to how much he wanted to be here. And you made a great point about it was obvious he was very happy to be there. It was obvious that it's where he wanted to be. But the fact, as you said, that he was able to take that part of the team that he just left and put it behind him and look comfortable and look like the Diamondback jersey, the jersey for the new team, fit perfectly, I think in his case is especially remarkable, because if you look at that 3 World Series and 5-year run, other than Buster Posey, he's probably the face of it.
Yeah.
Like, he was there in 10, he was there in 12, he was there big time in 14. He was there for the whole thing. It's not, you know, Hunter Pence was there for part of it, and Cody Ross and Marco Scudero were big in 10, and different guys came and went.
Right.
And there was Belt, and there was Crawford. But some of the faces changed. But he and Buster Posey, to me, were really the axis around which everything revolved. So for him to put all of that behind him, I mean, he was really part of the identity of those teams and that run. So for him to put that behind him and move on, I think, is especially impressive.
And let's not forget, you know, and beyond that, in 16 they didn't win the World Series, but his wild card game performance was, you know, pretty important for them getting there. I remember in 2012 they were in St. Louis, and Bumgarner got moved to the bullpen in the league championship series. He had struggled. I'll have to find out exactly. This seems odd to think of, right, that Madison Bumgarner would struggle in the postseason. But in the league championship series against St. Louis that year, he allowed 6 runs in 3 2/3 innings in his one start, and he had gotten moved to the pen. They weren't sure if they were going to start him. They started Barry Zito in Game 5, who had the biggest start of his career. They were down 3-1, ended up coming back and winning that series.
This is 12, right?
This is 2012. Yeah. And then he came back in the World Series that year and seven shutout innings of two-hit ball as the Giants won the pennant or won the World Series. I mean, that's
I was there. I was
incredible.
In Detroit for, and San Francisco for that series. And Vogelsong was the hot pitcher during that 2012 run. Ryan Vogelsong was unbelievable. His two-seam fastball was suddenly unhittable. And I was at those games in the World Series. And boy, he was part of the identity of that entire run. And he was one of the faces. He and Buster Posey really were the two key guys throughout the whole thing. And I think the fact that he's so willing and ready and seems to have already put it behind him and moved on and taken on a new identity in a new role, I think is doubly impressive.
All right, let's talk about what's still to come for the Diamondbacks, because as we talked about, you mentioned, you know, $6 million is what reportedly he's going to take in salary, Bumgarner, this year, which really doesn't do much of a dent to the Diamondbacks' budget for 2020. It leaves open a possibility that I think is going to be interesting to watch, which is, you know, the Diamondbacks have said that they would maybe be willing to move a starter if they could acquire another one to backfill the position. They've got that now. But now I think it increases the possibility that, you know, that they don't make a trade out of their starting rotation, and that this rotation looks like Bumgarner and Ray and Gallen and Weaver and Leak on opening day, which all of a sudden Merrill Kelly is depth and Alex Young is depth, yeah. And both of the guys pitched extremely well. I'm not saying that that's necessarily what's going to happen, but I don't know that I necessarily would have thought of that before you started to see the way that Bumgarner structured his contract.
The theory, or at least the math on this going in, was, okay, if you sign a player of Madison Bumgarner's caliber, that's going to eat up most of the money that you've allocated this offseason to go get a couple of bats, presumably a center fielder and a right fielder. However, if Mad Bum agrees to only have a $6 million salary for next year, now suddenly you haven't allocated all that money. Now you don't have to trade, let's say, Robbie Ray, who figures to make about $10 million or so in arbitration in the final year of his contract before he becomes a free agent. Now you don't have to move Robbie Ray to free up that $10 million to go get your right fielder. You haven't spent it yet because Mad Bum is making a $6 million salary. So suddenly, you don't have to do that. Now you've got a really, really good rotation, and you've just added to it. On the other hand, teams like the Twins or the Angels or the White Sox, who it seems all three for me, have to fix their starting pitching.
Yeah.
Have to. They have to do what Texas figured out a way to do, which is add key pieces like Kluber and Gibson and some other guys, Jordan Lyles. What's going on in Anaheim and Chicago and some of these other places? Minnesota, I know Odorizzi took his
qualifying offer.
So their situation might not be as dire. But the point being is, now the teams that haven't done anything to improve the rotation, now the price for those teams seems to go up. Their situations get a little bit more desperate. So now maybe if you decide, okay, let's move Robbie Ray, you get by acquiring Madison Bumgarner, you've cornered the market. So in a sense, you might get even more for Robbie if you trade him than you would have if you hadn't acquired Madison Bumgarner, because he'd still be out there.
You're kind of in the catbird seat if you're the Diamondbacks in
both
that regard.
Ways. Both ways,
because the rotation is pretty good if it's got Robbie Ray in it, and you're also able to explore trade opportunities. And the other part is, you mentioned the offense. So they still need to address the offense, not just right field and center field, or center field / second base. I think we can still use it as that because of Marte. But you know, not just address those positions, but address the depth as well. But they have the resources to be able to do it. The one thing that has been a little bit troubling, I don't want to say necessarily troubling, but the one thing that has kind of slowed things down on the offensive side is that the trade market really has not taken shape. And as we sit and record this, Josh Donaldson is still the big bat that's available on the free agent market. And not that that's in play for the Diamondbacks, but until Josh Donaldson signs, I think a lot of the trade market is going to continue to be bogged down on the position player side. Once he goes, you're going to start seeing teams start to look for corner bats via trade, because the collection of outfielders that's out there, is there's some good players in it. Cole Calhoun's a good player. Castellanos is a good hitter. You know, Marcelo Ozuna has had some very good seasons in the past. You know, Puig is interesting. I do love the idea of Puig.
Don't you, though? I mean, come on.
From an entertainment standpoint, how great would that be?
There's part of every Diamondback fan that wants to see that. Even if it's just a little 5% in there somewhere, you can't tell me, you know what, I'd like just to see what that would look like, even if it's just for one series.
I think it'd be entertaining. But,
would it ever.
There are a number of outfielders that are available, but none of them are really truly impact offensive players. And so I think that's one of the things that is going to continue to pick up. As Mike said when we talked to him in the interview earlier, he was hopeful that the trade market was going to start to heat up a little bit more before Christmas. Now that we're in the holidays, maybe it extends into January. But I think once Josh Donaldson signs, you're going to start to see more movement when it comes to guys like who have been rumored, like Chris Bryant or Nolan Arenado or Mitch Haniger. And not to say that all those guys are necessarily fits for what the Diamondbacks are looking for, but it all works together in concert. And the beauty of the way that this deal is structured is that nothing is off the table for the team to be able to do to try and improve.
If you really think about what they've accomplished here, it's remarkable how they've just given themselves more options, strengthened their position both in the trade market and in the rotation. I mean, there's no negative to this whatsoever at all. I think because things at the winter meetings, and you were there and I was not, because they moved so...
We missed you, though.
I know you did. You were busy. You with your fancy dinners and your drinks and your schmoozing and the whole thing. But because things move so quickly, so rapid fire, bang, 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 unlike the last few years, one guy signs, another guy signs, and then off you go. I think that needed to get settled before teams could go, okay, all the big free agents, or most of them, we know where they are. We pretty much know where the remaining few are going to go. Then you start to look at, okay, now what do we have to do trade-wise? And I think the free agent had to sign before the trades could really, really pick up steam.
You nailed it. And, Steve Gilbert and I talked about that a little bit last week on the pod, but this is just from talking to a lot of GMs and former GMs. I mean, generally what happens is you go into the winter and you start checking in on free agents if you're a front office and you don't like the prices, so you go to the trade market and you don't like the prices there, so then you start signing free agents, and then once free agents are exhausted, your only chance to upgrade is on the trade market. And that's kind of where we are. Well, it's especially where we are on the starting pitching side. I mean, I think you saw it with, Ryu and Keuchel being the two biggest names that are left on the free agent market. That helped to lead Texas to trade for Corey Kluber. And that also took another starter off the board.
Who they got for almost nothing.
Yeah, who they got. Well, Emmanuel Clase isn't nothing. I mean, he's going to be a good reliever, but it certainly seems like it's light for a two-time Cy Young Award winner in terms of the return. Right. But you start to see those guys come off the board. And obviously, Bumgarner came off the board on the same day. And that starts to impact that market. And that's where we are. I think, Rendon, Donaldson, those were the two big bats. Once Donaldson signs, whether it's Washington or Atlanta, that seems to be the two most likely, although Minnesota's still involved. Once he leaves, gets his fourth year from somebody who's going to cave and give him 4 years, then I think you're going to start to see everything else pick up, and that's where you'll get the place for the winner. One other thing to mention, I know you're a big Shogo Akiyama fan, because I think you just want to say his name.
I just want to be able to say Shogo!
Diamondback's one of the four teams that met with him at the winter meetings, along with the Cubs, the Reds, and the Rays. And Shogo was hoping to make a decision by Christmas. So that could come within the next few days.
Why don't the Cubs just play Elmore in center field? I don't get it.
He's really, really struggled against
right-handed pitching. I think Shogo would be great. A left-hand batter, gets on base, a good defender by all accounts. He's a nice bridge to Alex Thomas, whoever you want to put in center field in a few years. He seemed like he'd be a good fit. I know Avisail Garcia just signed, right?
Yeah.
With Tampa? Yeah.
No, Milwaukee. He was in Tampa
last year.
Yeah.
2 years
plus an option.
So
he can hit. You know what? He's actually turned himself into a way better player than he can. When he came up with Detroit, he got a lot of little Miggy comps because he looked physically a little like Miguel Cabrera.
Sure,
now he's a little different. He actually runs pretty well. Went to the White Sox, really scuffled with them for the most part, until 2017. Had an all-star season, was really, really good. And then 2018 had a knee injury that sapped his contact skills. Still hit for some power, but it sapped his contact skills and really reestablished himself last year in Tampa. He's like, when you start using the StatCast metrics, he's 90th percentile in sprint speed in the majors, which is really interesting, right? So he's going to play some left and center for the Brewers.
But he's good hitter. Yes, definitely. But he's a nice sort of middle tier piece that's found. My point being that some of the other guys are now starting to slot in and find their places. By the way, did Milwaukee clear $60 million worth of payroll to sign up Asiel Garcia? I mean, what are they doing over there?
You know, I keep thinking that they've got one more big move in them, and I wonder if it's an acquisition. I mean, I think my question is who's going to play third base. First baseman, they'll find somebody. Justin Smoke might be, I think, is a really good fit for them.
Ryan Healy?
CJ Krohn. They did sign Ryan Healy, but Healy is coming off hip surgery in August. It may not be ready right away.
They cleared all that money, and they haven't really done a whole lot.
Yeah, but there hasn't been.
And traded most of their rotation.
But none of the big bats have come off the board. Outside of Rendon, who they weren't going to play on.
Well, who only that's left is Castellanos and Ozuna that you would classify
well,
as a big
Donaldson
bat.
Well, Donaldson is a big bat, too.
But do you see him going to Milwaukee?
Yeah, I think he would be a really good fit for them, actually.
Well, they need a third baseman.
They need a third baseman.
No
and
Travis
signed,
Shaw, no Moustakas.
Right. They've signed players over 30 to big contracts like Lorenzo Cain before. He probably prices himself out, but they also could play on the trade market. You know, if there's a big bat that's available via trade. There's been a lot of rumors about Nolan Arenado.
We talked about this the last time I was on the show, sitting here in the – what's the name of this room again?
Diamondbacks Digital Recording Studio.
Otherwise known as your third bedroom. the Rockies, you got to take a real – I think the Rockies need to take a good, hard look in the mirror and say, you know, we had a really good group, even going back to where Cargo was part of it, and we got as far as we were going to go. The pitching is kind of backed up on us. Some of the guys are a little bit older now. Blackman's a corner outfielder now. He's not a center fielder anymore. Do we need to really blow this up and take it apart? Like I've constantly read and heard that the Cubs are going to do, but they haven't done really anything.
Yeah, I don't think the Cubs are going to tear it apart. I mean, I think that they're
similar. They're not going to give Rizzo the extension. They're going to trade Bryant. They're going to trade Schwarber. You keep hearing, I don't know how much of this is true, granted, but it's all floating around out there. And I think for the Rockies, they might be very much in the same boat. Like, look, we can pay Nolan Arenado all this money, but what's it going to get us? Are we still going to be the third best team in the West or fourth best team? So why not trade them and start over?
I think
you can make a pretty valid argument.
I think in both cases, the reason why they're talking about these players moving, like Bryant and Arenado, is because they take up a huge chunk of their payroll and they're limited on their budgets. Yes. And so what they need to do is they need to – neither of them are wanting to punt the season, but both of them have multiple holes that they need to fill that they feel like they can fill in part via trade – and then the other part is, you know, being able to have some flexibility freed up for free agency.
I get why they need to do it. In fact, if I'm the Rockies, you think trading Nolan Arenado, what are you, crazy?
A year after signing him.
But I know it looks bad, and I know they'll take a massive PR hit, and a lot of the fans will be upset, but I'm not sure they have any other choice.
You know, the thing that really boxed them in, and again, like this guy's a really good player, is extending Charlie Blackmon when they did.
Yeah.
Because he's a little bit older. The contract is structured in a way that he's got options. There are player options at the back end of it, although the numbers get a little bit less in the final 2 years. But he could have as much as 4 years and $73 million left. And you know, listen, I'm not going to say that Charlie Blackmon is a bad player because clearly he's still a really good offensive player. Wouldn't you love to have him in your lineup?
Oh, my gosh.
And I think he's going to be a really good hitter for the next several years. But to do that and then to have knowing that you're going to have to extend Arenado at some point, that really you're tying up a lot of payroll in two spots. And listen, they spend. You know, it's not like the Rockies don't spend. Their ownership gives them a lot. Between that and some of the free agent deals to relievers, they've put themselves in a tough spot, and they need to find a way to solve it if they want to remain competitive.
I mean,
the division's changing.
That's one of the reasons they reportedly got rid of LeMahieu, so they could pay Arenado, and the guy turned out to be an MVP-caliber player.
Yeah.
In the other league, by the way. I think the Rockies have to really look at that and figure something out. You know, it's interesting. You raised the point about paying Blackmon into his mid-30s or even late-30s. We were just talking about Madison Bumgarner. Look at where the Giants are. Now, the Giants have a lot of money. They have probably a higher payroll ceiling than a lot of clubs do. But they're going to be paying Brandon Belt for a while. They're going to be paying Brandon Crawford for a while. And some of these other
Buster Posey.
Like, you know, there's the old theory, don't fall in love with your own guys. That's usually applied to prospects. But if you look at this Patriots run, Bill, not that they do everything right. Hello.
Here we go.
No, but I'm just saying, if get rid of the guy. Belichick has always gotten rid of the guy a year, going back to Logan Mankins and some of the Ted Johnson and some of the players from the first Super Bowl teams. He always seems to get rid of them a year early, and everybody goes, wow, that guy, he's just cold and cruel and heartless. Well, here we are 15 years later, and they've won a million Super Bowls. There's a reason why you do that. Well, and that the Giants have made themselves an issue now that Farhan has got to fix. And the Rockies seem to be maybe in the same boat. It's something worth looking at.
That's the old Branch Rickey line, right? Branch Rickey, who ran the Dodgers and Pirates and Cardinals for years, he basically invented farm systems. He helped to bring
quality through
barrier,
quantity,
was
he used
great.
To say, yeah.
But it's better to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late was one of the things. And there, if you look back through, especially in the Dodgers days, there were a number of trades they made of guys who were good players who, you know, they ended up having another good year someplace else, but it allowed them to bring in another player. And clearly salaries were a little bit different than in the pre-free agency era. But you're right. I mean, I think that's one of those things that you need to look at and be mindful of. And I think we as sports fans have adjusted to that, too, over the last
yes.
two decades to have a better understanding
right.
of how
people
the business
yes.
side of it works.
I think fans have a much better understanding and a much better tolerance for that's a smart move. No, that's a dumb move. This is they now understand, or we all do, how it can hamstring an organization. And back to the Giants for just a quick second. You know, when they had that run, they won all the World Series. Everybody got a new deal. Belt got a new deal. Crawford got a new deal. The one guy that didn't, Madison Bumgarner. And he was asked about that. Is there, I don't know if the word bitterness was used. I'm not sure. I may be just projecting that. But he was asked about, you know, hey, is that one of the reasons why you were so ready to leave the Giants? And I think he said something like, well, we'll talk about that in the spring, because he wanted to make his introductory day all about the Diamondbacks
right.
and how happy he was to be there. And he didn't want any bitterness or didn't want any name calling going back to San Francisco. But that seemed to be part of the deal for him.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear what he has to say about that.
Yeah,
listen, I'm just glad that he's here.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, it's just, boy, he just seems like, and I talked to him for maybe 10 minutes one-on-one, and no big deal, but, boy, you could just see how happy he was
yeah.
to be there. And that really, really made an impression on me, and I think it did on everybody. It jumped right out. This is where he wanted to be. He said so, and you can tell that he meant it.
Well, now, since most folks can tell the difference between smart and dumb stuff, this dumb stuff is going to wrap up for now. What is your best Christmas gift that you've purchased this year?
That I've
purchased? Can you reveal that?
Yeah, I bought my wife a house. That's my classic answer. What'd you get your wife?
Oh, man.
I bought her a house.
I got her. I got my wife planters.
Much exactly. Much like the Farron compound here. We have been undergoing an off-season worth of renovations to the old house, so that has taken up most of the Christmas present
You're
money.
You doing it yourself there, Bert?
Well, yeah, I'm doing it all 220, 221.
Taking one of ball peen hammers?
Whatever it takes. Some 3-in-1 oil and some gauze pads. We've done a lot of stuff around the house. So the Christmas present budget took a major hit, almost to the point of non-existence. But what did I get? You know what she wants? She wants one of them Apple watches.
Oh, yeah. Them are nice.
Another expensive gift that,
right.
that I can get. Actually, all the Christmas present money goes to Jon Snow, the dog.
Yeah. Let's get what happened here. We've got actually a number of my family members are coming in, and then my wife's brother and his kids are coming. We're going to have a bunch of kids here for Christmas. So
and
it's
you
gone
had a Thanksgiving
that.
Like that, from what I understand.
Yeah, we had a good crowd at Thanksgiving.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
We were otherwise
Thanks for
engaged.
Not coming.
I figured you had 50 people in the house.
We didn't even miss you.
I bought myself a lovely Christmas present the other day. I texted you a picture of
yes,
it.
Yes, you did.
I bought myself Skip Lockwood's book.
Have
I'm like,
you been devouring it?
You know what? Skip Lockwood wrote a book, and by God, I'm going to read it.
Explain for people, some of our younger listeners who may not, for you kids at home, who may not understand exactly who Skip Lockwood was. In fact, I think there's probably some hardcore baseball fans who don't know who Skip Lockwood
is. Skip Lockwood, I believe, came up with the Kansas City A's. Played for a number of different teams, the Brewers. He finished his career with the Red Sox. He's a Massachusetts native, but he was a very good closer for the Mets in the mid to late 70s. He had some pretty good seasons there as their closer on some not great Met team, you know, the Steve Henderson.
Yeah.
76, 77-ish Mets. But he's a guy, and he wrote a book, and it was $6, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to buy that and read it. So I did.
Was it even autographed for $6?
No, I should have
sent it out.
But anyway, it just came through the Amazon yesterday, so that's on the list. That's about
the drones dropped it off at the house.
That's right, and then flew away. That's about the highlight of Christmas. We did go see my boy Nick Offerman the other day do his one-man show over at the Celebrity
Theater. Big baseball fan.
Big Cub fan. He has twice.
Hey, Cub fans.
Twice sung the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field the last 2 years when we were there, and I got to meet him for 10 seconds. He couldn't have been nicer or cooler, but he, of course, is one of the stars of my favorite all-time show, Parks and Recreation, where he plays the great Ron Swanson.
Yes.
Where one of his famous lines is, "There are two things in the world I hate, liars and skim milk," which is water lying about being milk. But anyway, we saw that show, and I got a Skip Lockwood book.
That's good.
It's about as good as it gets.
Exciting life.
Well, I know it's very glamorous. What have you purchased for the lovely Erica?
I told you we got planters. We didn't get each other much for. She bought me a griddle for the stovetop. And I bought
griddle.
Planters.
Like for pancakes and stuff?
Yeah. Well, I'll show you when we go out and retire to the kitchen.
That's thoughtful when we go down to the other wing. That's thoughtful because you cook a lot.
Yes.
Now, you did get one of those Pelotons, which I...
We did.
Where's the Peloton?
It's in another room.
It's in another wing. The house is so big, I can't find anything.
It's going to move, I think, tonight, we decided. But yeah, we got one of those Pelotons.
That's pretty cool.
It's,
good
it's
for
fun.
You.
It's fun. Yeah. I like it. We'll see how it goes.
How many times have you used it so far?
I have used it, 4 times in 5 days.
Good
for
you.
For the cost, I should be using it 6 times a day.
They are not cheap, from what I understand.
No, they're not.
So you're on the thing. And then
I believe it's financed for longer than either of our cars are.
It's more expensive than either of your cars.
Not true. Our car. Yeah, no, that's actually true.
So you're on the Peloton, and there's a guy on the screen yelling at you while
yes,
you're riding.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
It's a little bit like watching you on TV.
Hello. Lady. Thanks, Mike, for having me.
Yeah,
here.
No problem. Hey, I just wanted to let folks know, obviously we're into the final shopping days before Christmas and Hanukkah, but there are a limited amount of the new D-backs jerseys that are in the team store.
I was there yesterday.
I was too.
Buying some stuff for some of the relatives. And yeah, some of the new stuff has started to arrive.
So if you want to get it, and they can customize those jerseys in the store, I do believe. So you go to the D-backs team shop down at Chase Field. Open every day, but Sunday, I think, right now?
I think we need to get you a new D-backs jersey that has Moral Compass on the back.
Maybe just say Compass? Is that my last name?
No, mine.
This is like a Players Weekend jersey?
Mike Farron, the Moral
Compass.
You know,
nobody actually calls me the Moral Compass.
I know, only me. Well, Leo Gilmartin invented the nickname for you, the Moral Compass, when he found out that you are an ordained minister.
Yes, I am ordained.
You have married people, which
I
is just
two.
Stunning to me.
And both couples are still together.
I was going to say two people or two couples?
Two couples.
So you're two for two.
So far.
So as someone who has filled out the proper paperwork to marry people for life, you are then known as the Moral Compass. That's how that started. It's not a very good story. But
no, it's not.
But I think it's interesting.
I do get asked every once in a while, usually when they say, I heard on Diamond Talk that...
No one calls it
Steve.
That. Everyone, as we know, everyone calls it Snake Talk,
it
as
that.
They will call this the Snake Talk podcast.
We'll have more exciting stuff in the new year.
Did you cut out a thing in the back of a magazine or something?
What's the modern equivalent of that? It's like
that's
clicking
true.
On a hyperlink
going
on Facebook.
When it's a little pop-up ad came up and you said, sure, I'll do that.
That's exactly what it is, yeah. The great thing is I got Sea Monkeys with it.
Where are the Sea Monkeys? Are they still alive? They're in the Sea Monkey Room, which is where
the
Peloton
sea
is.
Room, right, is. That's,
the
no,
sea
no, no, there's a
the Sea
rooms.
Monkeys just float and watch you ride your Peloton.
It's amazing what kind of money you can make.
Well, the instructor yells at you. Well, look at Jim Duquette. He's high rolling.
Nobody knows who Jim Duquette is.
That's probably true.
We'll be back after the holidays, unless
just
news
kidding,
breaks.
Duke.
If news breaks, we'll fix it. We'll get you information on breaking news that the D-backs have it between now and New Year's. And other than that, we'll be back in the new year with another Hot Stove podcast. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year to you and yours.
Happy holidays, everybody. Go D-backs.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the D-backs Hot Stove.